Welcome to Module 2 in this series about shared management of service providers. In this module, we focus on the very important issue of organisational culture, and specifically, we're going to help you explore how your culture measures up against the five core shared management principles. Because organisational leaders are so critical to setting and maintaining a good culture, it's really important that leaders engage with this topic. You'll see that there's a workbook that accompanies the module. Please make sure that you have it available and open. You'll have activities to do and you can make some notes as we go along. My co-presenter today is Rosie Lawn. Rosie is the CEO of Avivo Live Life, a West Australian-based community service provider in the disability, aged care and mental health sectors. Rosie is also a member of the board of WA's Individualised Services, or WASE for short.
Hi everyone. Hi Leighton. Are you going to tell people who you are?
Yeah, that's probably a good idea, Rosie. I'm Leighton Jay. My eldest son is an NDIS participant, and on his behalf I manage his funding and services. In my day job I work as an organisational and management consultant and do most of my work in the disability and human services fields. So Rosie, in module one, and you were with us for that, we briefly touched on this topic of culture. Now, as a CEO, I'm keen to know why you think culture is so important when we think about shared management.
Well, there's been lots of research on organisational culture over a very long period of time. So there's a lot that we now know about culture.
But that's beyond our sector, obviously.
Yeah, everywhere, every organisation. So among other things, research has demonstrated that culture has a profound influence on many aspects of the organisational life and success. So it's important to make sure that your culture aligns with what you're trying to do and achieve. And we also know that very intentional and deliberate decisions and actions are needed to build and maintain and transform culture. And you don't end up with a good culture just by accident.
No, yeah, I'd agree with that.
And, you know, organisational leaders, including board members, have a primary responsibility for really actively creating and influencing and monitoring the culture. And as a leader, if you're not actively and purposefully developing your organisation's culture, you can't expect others to create or contribute to the culture that you want to have.
Yeah, and sometimes that's a challenge in our sector because most directors on boards are doing it as a volunteer contribution, so sometimes getting them to engage in this stuff can be a bit more challenging, but it's really important, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. I think it's something that is a really important thing for boards to think about.
So if we come back to the focus on shared management, why is culture especially relevant to shared management? Isn't it just true of all organisations?
Yes, it's true everywhere. But in our context, shared management means that providers support people and families to have a level of power and authority of their services that they don't traditionally or haven't traditionally had. So if your organisation is going to do this, you need to have a culture that enables and supports it to happen. And as you mentioned in Module 1, that we will challenge some really deeply held beliefs and assumptions that we as providers have held and not even really been aware of. These will show up in all your organisation's systems and processes and in how the decisions you make and the behaviours and actions of employees.
Okay, so as a CEO, again, how important do you think this module is for board members and executives?
I think it's critical and it's essential.
Okay.
While, you know, other staff will benefit from it too, they aren't necessarily in a position to make decisions that have a broad impact on culture to the same degree. So it's pretty hard for them if to influence or make change if the leadership is not supporting or taking responsibility for the culture. So if your organization's leaders and board members are not completing this module, you need to be aware that without their engagement, input and leadership, it's unlikely that you'll significantly influence your organisation's culture.
So that comes back to what we really know about culture, that leaders' engagement in it is really critical, isn't it? So, Rosie, in your experience, what happens when you don't get culture right?
Well, in any context, if your culture isn't aligned to your purpose, your values, and your strategy, then it's likely that staff will feel that their work lacks meaning and significance.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that means to workers that they become disengaged and unmotivated. And in our sector, these staff will make people who they work for more dependent, not less.
Yeah. Okay, I've seen that happening, you know, that level of disengagement and motivation happening across lots of organisations. And I have seen that effect of making people more dependent in our sector. It also seems to have a negative impact on the organisation. As I've seen, when people are disempowered and they have less choice and control, it almost always results in them getting worse life outcomes.
Yeah.
They end up with things like social isolation, being very dependent and devalued and unhappy, maybe even trapped.
Yeah.
Is that your experience similar to that?
Yes, and sometimes this happens without people, you know, the employees even realising that this is what they're doing, or probably the leadership doesn't realise it.
Yeah.
And in an NDIS world, this is likely to become a bigger problem for you.
Okay, yep. Now, when we know from research that when you get your culture right, staff generally become more engaged by the work, and they know that it's meaningful and important, and they feel motivated.
Yeah, absolutely. And with shared management, your services are likely to be on the way to, you know, contemporary best practices, and the people you serve will feel respected, valued, and motivated and happy about their lives. So they will be making their own decisions and contributing to their communities, and they will become, you know, your unofficial ambassadors, offering free public endorsements for your organisation.
Well, that's going to be good, isn't it?
And if you get it right.
I mean, there's that adage, isn't there, about, you know, a satisfied customer tells people, and dissatisfied customers also tell people. But you'll be well on your way to becoming an employer of choice if that's happening as well, won't you? Because you'll be enjoying good word of mouth reputation for valued quality services, and that's for both people who want to be employees and for people who want good services.
Yeah, that's right. And when you get the culture right, you know, your staff will know and believe that all people communicate and exercise choice and make good decisions for themselves when given the right kind of support.
Yeah.
They will behave in ways that demonstrates real respect for people with disabilities and their families, and they will see them as equals and as people with really valuable expertise who have it, who it is a privilege and an honour to support by doing things with them rather than for them.
Okay. I reckon your systems will also develop in a way that they'll easily enable people to design their own supports and ensure that they can get the support they need when they need it. Your staff will be actively enabling people with disability to hold socially valued roles in their communities, which, and for all of us, that's where we build meaningful friendships and relations with others.
Yeah.
We contribute to our communities and we meet people who've got similar interests, don't we? So all of that brings us to the first activity, which is, how does your organisation currently rate for culture, for shared management? Now, if you completed Module 1, this activity should look pretty familiar with you. It's the culture part of the quiz at the end of Module 1. We want you to either quickly redo the quiz now, or you can look up your answers from the Module 1 workbook and transfer them to here. But just pause the recording now and fill in your scores. And if you're listening to this as a podcast and you can't check in with the workbook right now, make sure you set aside some time to do this and the other activities afterwards. So how did you go with that? It's likely that there are areas where your score can improve, and that's our goal for you from here on in.
And if you haven't already worked it out, we think this is really important stuff, and we're really glad that you're completing this module. Look, we expect it will give you the confidence and direction you need to improve on your culture score. And because we want it to be practical, you will identify at least some actions you can take to align your culture with the core principles and practices of shared management.
And so this module, you'll essentially be working to achieve three outcomes, and you can see those in the introduction section of your workbook. Very briefly, the first one is identify and describe several features of your organisation that both influence and reflect its culture. Second one, identify the extent to which your organisation's culture supports the five core principles of shared management. You'll see in the workbook that we've spelled out what those five principles are. And the third learning outcome is describe how your organization's culture needs to change in order for you to deliver or continue to deliver high quality shared management. So we'll talk about organizational culture from a general perspective first, and then we're going to focus on its relationship to shared management. From what we've said so far, you already know that culture is really important for a whole bunch of reasons, and there's a common saying you may have be familiar with, which is culture eats strategy for breakfast.
Yeah, culture has a profound effect on so many aspects of organisational life that include the, you know, the mental and physical well-being of all the employees and people who use your services. You know, if you have a poor culture, you will have unhappy employees, and you can be pretty sure that at least some of them will pass on some of their unhappiness to your to your customers, which is definitely not what you want happening.
Nope. So what is organisational culture? That seems a pretty foundational question to ask.
A common answer I've heard a lot of times, it's the way things are done around here.
Yeah, I've heard that one a lot too, Rosie. And it's a fairly simple but nonetheless useful definition, but let's probe a little deeper. I want you to meet a guy called Edgar Schein. He's one of the 20th century's greatest management thinkers, and he describes culture as the deeper level of basic assumptions and beliefs that are shared by members of an organisation. And those assumptions and beliefs operate unconsciously and define, in a basic, taken-for-granted fashion, an organisation's view of itself and its environment. Now, he's written a lot about culture, and he goes on to explain that these assumptions and beliefs are learned responses that a group or an organisation develops over time. They get taught to newcomers as the correct way, the way of doing things around here, of perceiving, of thinking, of feeling in relation to acceptable norms and behaviours. So we end up with that simple definition.
So it is fair to say that culture shows itself in lots of ways in organisations.
Yes, definitely, Rosie. Many people have studied this in a great deal of detail. Schein presents culture as being like an onion, with beliefs and assumptions at the inner or deepest level. And then your organisation's espoused or stated values, they'll tell you something about your culture.
And if people don't live by their espoused values, that also tells you something about what the real culture is
Absolutely,
like.
Absolutely, yes. And culture can usually also be seen in things like symbols and stories that get repeated, structures, processes, acceptable and unacceptable behaviours, lines of authority, policies.
And don't forget the things that get measured and rewarded. These also say a lot about what is valued in the organisation and therefore about your culture.
Yes. We could go and talk about the Banking Royal Commission, but we won't. Let's go to activity 2.1. Turn to it now in your workbook. You'll see that we've put a question there. What do your organisation's artefacts, symbols, stories, processes, practices and behaviours say about your organisation's culture? We've also put a few other sub-questions there, A, B and C. We want you to pause the recording and spend a few minutes reflecting on each of these questions and make some notes in the spaces we've provided. Click play when you're ready to continue. How did you go? Obviously, the answers to these questions will be different for each organisation, and we don't expect you to compile a complete list right now.
The most important thing is to keep these questions with you over the next few weeks. If you use them to help you be more observant and curious while you're at work, or it will be more likely that you'll identify some of the pervasive assumptions and beliefs that guide how things are done in your organisation.
Yeah, it's hard sometimes to study your own culture. Yeah. It's because it's assumptions and beliefs, and assumptions by their very nature are things that we take for granted. So let's look more closely now at the relationship between culture and shared management. We've identified five principles that are essential to really good shared management, and these are based on what we've learned from many years of successful shared management experiences in Western Australia and in other places. While some of these principles may be new to you, at least in the words we've used, we think that they are all essential foundations for shared management.
Yeah, and we've learned that when you put them into action, people with disability are genuinely empowered to have, you know, maximum control over their lives, their supports and services, and their living arrangements.
So the next five activities, if you like, will each take one of the principles in turn and relate it specifically to your organisation's culture. And we'll recap what you learned from doing all five of them after you've done them all. So the first principle is that shared management is a partnership built on mutual respect in which the person or their representative is the leader. Both parties will treat each other openly, honestly, and fairly.
So if your organisation has a culture that reflects a commitment to this principle, you'll see things like people with a disability or an intellectual disability being members of your board, or you will employ people with disability and have targets or quotas for the number of people with disability you employ.
And at a service level, people that you support will be making lots of decisions for themselves, such as who works for them, what time they might get out of bed or go to bed. Your staff will demonstrate respect for the people who use your services in the way that they interact with them.
Yeah, and your organisation will be actively investing in relationships that really create opportunities for people and families to be in control of the service design.
Turn to activity 2.2a in your workbook. Pause the video or the podcast now. Take a few minutes to follow the instructions to complete the activity. The question is, how is working in partnership with people and families part of your culture? If possible, share your answers with a partner before continuing. And of course, when you're ready to go on, just click play.
The second principle is that shared management is built on recognising the person's expertise in organising and guiding their own life. This includes the person's decisions about how much responsibility they have in the shared management arrangement.
So we talked about this in Module 1. One of the key changes the NDIS is bringing in is the right of people with disability, and I think especially people with intellectual or cognitive disability, to make their own decisions. Mm. And this is a change from the state systems we've had before, in which other people made many decisions for people in their best interests. And that belief is so deeply ingrained in the whole disability service system that it does operate at an assumption level for many people and many organisations.
Yeah, that's right, Leighton. We spoke about this in Module 1, didn't we?
Yeah, we did.
Before the NDIS, the entire disability system was pretty much built on other people making decisions in the best interest of people with disability.
Yep.
And one effect of this was that it really disempowered many people with disability over a very long period of time.
So in this new era, it's useful for organisations to be curious about the extent to which you and others actually believe that it's possible for everyone and all people with disability to make their own decisions. And what does it take to make and or enable that to happen? And what gets in the way of that happening?
Yeah, and it's worth remembering too that most people who don't have a disability grow up to be able to guide and organise their own lives as adults.
Yeah.
You know, this includes letting them make decisions that are not always in their own best interests or that other people might view as wrong or unwise or foolish. I think we've all done those things.
You're saying I can't eat that family block of chocolate by myself?
Yes, or stay out all night.
So putting this principle into action requires your organisation to actually give away a whole lot of power, authority, control, doesn't it? So is your culture as an organisation one that will support this to happen? Turn to activity 2.2b because this activity will help you find out. The question we've posed for you is, how is recognising the person as an expert of their own life part of your culture? Now, that activity should look like this. Again, pause the video or the podcast, follow the instructions to complete the activity. If you do have a partner that you're working through these modules with, talk to them about your answers before continuing and click play when you're ready to go on. The third shared management principle is that shared management arrangements support and expand the individual's autonomy, capacity, and right to participate as a full citizen in all aspects of society and community.
This principle builds on the one you just looked at, and it extends the scope to including supporting people to live the life they want to live.
Exactly, Rosie. Now, there's a bloke called Tom Nerney who lives in Michigan, and he provides a useful and simplified way. I think it's a simplified way that service providers can actually act on this. And his ideas can help you take some very practical steps to achieve what this principle describes. So we're just going to play a short video of Tom talking about this now, and you might want to make some notes about the four elements that he talks about.
We think we could revolutionize long-term care if we focused on four areas, and they're what we call universal human aspirations. Everybody who's a citizen, as they grow up and become an adult, has the right and seeks a place to call home where they control the front door. That's an ordinary aspiration. The second one is people are active in their communities, not just physically, but in the form of membership and contribution. And that's an important element where people do have aspirations, but frequently have no control over transportation or anything else, and are not really members of the community in terms of membership. The third one is the notion that everybody wants long-term relationships, including intimate relationships. And I think self-determination is about encouraging people and giving them the support and the opportunity to do that. The other area of aspiration that we think is so important is to address what I call the forced impoverishment of individuals, getting people into the workforce or starting a very tiny business called a microenterprise. And what's interesting about it is that once you change your planning and people are able to make purchases towards those goals, then those aspirations that are personal to the individual rise to the surface, and they think now, you know, they can do what they always wanted to do. It's a different environment entirely. We need a better sense of urgency because people's lives are being lost. And if you think about the number of people in self-determination versus those who are not, we're still... We have a long, long ways to go.
Now, it's beyond the scope of the module to go into detail on these four dimensions, but I personally have no doubt, and I fully believe that Tom is absolutely right when he says that focusing on achieving meaningful outcomes for the people we support in these four areas has the potential to revolutionise disability services. I absolutely think he's onto something.
Yeah, so how does your organisation's culture measure up against this principle? Turn now to activity 2.2C.
And our question for you here is, how does your organisation's culture support and expand people's autonomy, capacity and participation? No surprise that the instructions here are similar to the previous couple of activities. So pause the recording while you work through the statements in the table and restart it when you've completed the activity. And if you've got a partner and want to discuss your answers with them before going on, that could be helpful. We're up to principle number four now, and this relates specifically to the person's control over their support arrangements. Principle four says the person or their representative can decide how their funded resources and services can best be used and organised. And the person or their representative has the right to change their mind.
Yeah, this principle endorses what is now a legal requirement under the NDIS Act.
Absolutely.
Yeah, the Act presumes that people with disability are capable of deciding things for themselves, and the objects and general principles of the Act repeatedly assert that people with disability can and should make their own decisions about aspects of their lives that affect them and are important
to them. That's great. It's really good.
It explicitly includes decisions about their paid support arrangements.
Yeah, so despite that actually being the law now, we yet to see a widespread revolution in service provider practices around this, are we, Rosie? And that's, I think, comes back to that beliefs and assumptions that many people with disability can't make their own decisions, and that belief continues to pervade many service providers and the system as a whole at a level below our conscious awareness.
Yeah, it's probably also even within people with disabilities themselves they've been taught not
That's
to trust
That's right, it's
that
sort of learned helplessness.
And their families,
yeah.
So yes, we would say that these beliefs are deeply embedded in our culture.
Yeah.
And in some ways they underpin, you know, they do underpin our main business models. Is this true for your organisation? It's time to find out.
So there are no surprises here. We're turning to activity 2.2D in your workbook. And the question is, in what ways does your culture enable people to make decisions about their services? We think you know what to do with these activities now, so press pause, follow the instructions, and click play when you're ready to go on again. The final shared management principle is that in shared management arrangements, the person or their representative is the employer or contractor of their support staff.
When you say employer, this means they are the person who hires the workers and includes arrangements when they are engaged as independent contractors. And it's also important to note that until fairly recently, we considered a range of other arrangements where the person wasn't the employer as examples of shared management too.
Yeah, we did, didn't we, Rosie? What changed?
Really, it's just been an evolution of our understanding and a recognition that if the provider is the actual employer, then that is really just an example of good self-directed services.
Uh-huh.
And that's good.
Yep.
But in Western Australia, we've found that lots of things change when the person becomes the actual employer.
Mm-hmm.
So it is more helpful to identify these as shared management situations. So it's a bit like doing self-management with additional support.
Okay. So in order to meet their legal obligations, many people are going to want some support. So culturally, again, we're sticking with that topic, your organisation needs to have staff who've got the right attitudes, the right values, and the knowledge and skills to be able to give them that support. And you need to have systems that facilitate people having the information they need when they need it so that they are in control of their arrangements. Is that pretty much how you'd see it?
Yeah. This will include, you know, technical things like budget management, payroll and timesheets.
Uh-huh.
And you know, include other elements related to being a good employer, such as how you recruit, train, communicate effectively and manage your team.
So turn now to activity 2.2E and follow the instructions. The question here is, do your organisation's processes and systems support people to engage their own employees? Press pause, do the activity, click play when you're ready to proceed. You're nearly done, so hang in there with us. So having done these five activities through 2.2, you've now lightly assessed your organisation's cultural readiness or suitability for shared management. And this final activity is designed to bring everything together for you.
Yeah, and find activity 2.3 in your workbook now.
This activity is a table that asks you to identify what needs to change in your organisation in relation to your culture around each of the five principles. And it asks you to identify what actions you're going to take by when to help create the changes that you can identify as needing to happen.
Follow all the instructions to complete the table. It will bring your thoughts, reflections and ideas together in one place and help you identify what your next steps need to be.
So we don't expect this module's necessarily giving you the solutions to any cultural issues you might have uncovered, but we hope it's sharpened your awareness of what those issues might be and that in itself gives you a chance to do something about them. Pause the video and when you've completed this activity, play the last part of the video. If you're listening to an audio while you drive or otherwise busy, make sure you set aside some time to do the workbook activities, including this one. So here again are the learning outcomes that we have set for this learning module. How did you go? First one was identify and describe several features of your organisation that both influence and reflect its culture. The second learning outcome was identify the extent to which your organisation's culture enables your staff to put those five principles of shared management into action. And the third learning outcome is describe how your organisation's culture needs to change in order for you to deliver or continue to deliver high quality shared management.
How are you feeling about them now?
Well, we've tried to keep fairly focused on them, and if we've done that well, you should feel clearer about them and more confident about what you need to do next. The home page for this module has some additional resources that might help you with those next steps. Remember, sitting in front of a computer doing an online learning module, that's the easy bit. Following through on your actions is harder work, so identify the support you're going to need to make sure you follow through and go and get it.
We should say, if you didn't score well on this assessment and or you can't get engagement from your leadership, then it might be likely that shared management is not for you at this time. Your culture isn't ready to support people to have the level of control shared management gives them. Yeah. So going ahead with it is likely to create quite a bit of pain and probably some real issues for people, families and staff and your organisation as a whole.
Yeah, I think that's really a wise comment, Rosie. So good luck with the next steps. If you're progressing or we're going to do module 3, I'll see you again soon. Rosie, thanks so much for being my co-presenter in these first two modules. It's been great.
Yeah, you're welcome, Nathan. And it's been fun. Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.